This is Pac-12 football.
The quick slant is picked off. It's Demaryius Randall, and he will take it to the house for an Arizona State touchdown.
And they give it to the linebacker, Jack, and he gets another first down. And here he goes, Miles Jack. How about that?
Heisman hopefuls.
Mariota with time over the middle.
Goes Hundley looking for another block. He's not going to need it. That is an 86-yard touchdown run.
The Conference of Champions brings you the Pac-12 Network's football podcast. Here are your hosts, Mike Yam and Rick Neuheisel.
What have you done for the last 63 days without a Pac-12 Network's football podcast? The band is back. Rick Neuheisel, Mike Yam.
The band, the duo, the dynamic duo.
It's a duo of...
Yamster, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, and I think there's so much to get to. This is an exciting time for us because basketball is in the rearview mirror. We're back into full swing of football mode. Spring games are in effect, even though Pac-12 Football Weekly has been going on throughout the course of the season, Wednesday nights, varying times, but there are...
Multiple rear.
There's a few of those. I missed the bell. I walked in, and I've already hammered this thing about 50 times for no apparent reason. Before we even talk football, we have some new toys to get to be unveiled a little bit later in the show. I do need to mention this. A huge congratulations goes to the important part of the duo, Rick Neuheisel, nominated for a Sports Emmy Award Best Studio Analyst. I'm the only one in here, so I will clap. Other people are clapping for you as well. Congratulations to you. I have already gone on record by saying you are going to win.
And I'm not going to win.
You are going to win.
But here's the important
thing. You are going to win.
The important thing is...
Don't say it like that. You got it. Would you ever say this to one of your teams? Hell no. You're going out there to win. We play to win the game.
We play to win the game. No, what's cool about this is it's a recognition of what we do, not just what I do. It's what we do. And when you get
fired, just show up.
When you get canned, as I got canned at UCLA, you're worried about what next are you going to do. So I get this opportunity, and then you worry, is it going to be weird? Is it going to be, it's completely new industry? Is there going to feel like it's a team? Well, thankfully, it has felt very much like a team. And so I give a big salute to all of our teammates, namely you, because you've made this a lot of fun.
Well, I have said this the other day to Ernie Kent, who's now the new head coach at Washington State.
Other than the nonsense that you spew.
Which is about 97% of the stuff that comes out of my mouth, that the coaches that have worked here have done a great job. And look, this is not a knock on Ernie, but you and I have worked together.
Ernie got a job. You got Ernie a job.
Yes, that did help.
I'm still looking for work.
I think it's like a coach's mentality where you guys help shape the culture. Now, you obviously had a few months on Ernie because of a football season starting first, and you're here every single week, and we spend a lot more hours together than Ernie and I did. But I think there's something to the coach's mentality when you come into the building that people sort of gravitate towards you, and I think it's a testament to what you do. And I'm surprised that you said you were worried about, after you got canned, so to speak, from UCLA, what you were going to do. Was there any doubt that you'd be doing this?
Actually, I didn't know. I mean, you always think about where you're going to get another coaching position.
Yeah.
But Larry Scott, our commissioner, said he had an opportunity that he'd like for me to consider, and I'm forever thankful.
Well, we are. Hugely happy that you are here, and more importantly, just get
tears
just
in my eyes.
Bring home
that, Mike.
Just bring home the Emmy. That's all I ask.
Listen,
just bring home the
Emmy. I'm bringing home nothing. All right,
you're
but
gonna,
I am.
I
but I'm
going
to sashay through New York like a big timer. I'm going to rub elbows. Collinsworth, what do you think about this? Say, hey, Strahan.
That is the competition, by the way.
Is Kelly fun to hang out with? Those are the kind of questions that I'm going to bring back with you.
You're up against Chris Collinsworth. You're better than him. Michael Strahan. And this is not a knock on these guys. Michael Strahan, I'd give you the edge. Al Leiter from MLB Network. Harold Reynolds from MLB Network. I believe Tom Verducci. Also from what's going on with this MLB love? There's something weird going on there. Beat the baseball guys is the only thing that I can... throw your way.
It's heady company,
yes.
And it's cool to be considered in that company and to wear the Pac-12 flag, you know, to wear the banner.
We're pumped. The Emmy nomination is out. The Emmy Award, it's coming up in a couple weeks, if I'm not mistaken.
May 6th.
May 6th, which means we have plenty of spring football to get to finally.
Yes, we do.
Finally.
For God's sake. We got the pigskin back in the air. Candelaria Coots is over there just rubbing her hands. Her Ducks are getting things going in Autzen Stadium as we speak. She's still a miffed about Stanford beating them last year.
There is something to that. Speaking of the Stanford Cardinal this weekend. In fact, every single Pac-12 team and their spring game, you will be able to watch on the Pac-12 Networks 3 this Saturday. That never gets old for me. And it starts off with Colorado. Before we even talk about Colorado and Arizona and Stanford, I want to get from you, from the coach's perspective and even the player's perspective, what are you trying to accomplish when it's the spring game and guys are battling, there's this competition. We were on conference calls today, heard Rich Rodriguez, David Shaw talk about this. The term competition was used a lot, more than I ring a bell in a podcast.
Well, it's our opportunity as a head coach to allow guys to try to beat one another out for starting positions. I mean, truthfully, when you get back, we're much different than the NFL, and I don't know if people really realize that, in that you only have about 29 days, 29 practices before your first game. And so you have to have kind of a lineup organized in your head so that you get your fundamental base work done in the first 2 weeks, and then the next 2 weeks are to polish, if you will, and get ready for game one, because there is no preseason game. The first game counts on your record. And so you have to have a lineup in mind. There's a couple places where the competition might extend all the way into the fall. But most places, you've got an idea of who's going to play. Even if it's a freshman, you've already got him penciled in as a guy who's going to fit in that position because of the evaluation that you were able to get on him prior to his arrival. So that happens. But in spring, this is a time where you can let guys go. Unfortunately, and I say this in kind of mixed emotions, unfortunately, there's only 15 practices. 15 practices doesn't give you a whole lot of opportunity to let everybody have a fair chance to compete for jobs, because the reps just, you know, the game of football is so physical, it's just difficult to have the amount of time that people need to find out who really can play. And like, for instance, if you're having a quarterback battle, well, it's much different to go with the first team as it is to go with the second and third team, especially with the offensive line, given protection issues and so forth. So you can't give every quarterback, okay, you're all getting five reps with the first team, because the first team can't go that many reps. So quarterback, you just have to be able to take it full advantage. If I'm talking to a player right now, you know, fair is where they give a blue ribbon to a pig.
Yeah.
Okay, there is no fair. But when you get a chance, you make sure you take advantage of it. And that's why I'm always talking about preparing for your opportunity. You have to be ready to take advantage of an opportunity when it's presented. And if you do, that's the good definition of good fortune. But coaches are constantly trying to find the combinations that are going to give them the best chance to win in the fall, trying to create some team building opportunities. We're going to see on our Football Weekly show a bunch of dancing and so forth.
Yeah.
People can have fun, cut loose a little bit. But this is a time when you're trying to polish, because it's the only time the NCAA allows football coaches to actually be with their team in a football context other than fall.
For some coaches, like Mike McIntyre, there's also a learning process. And what I mean by that is last year it's brand new coach in the Pac-12. He's taken over a program. He doesn't know a lot of these guys. He needs to figure it out on the fly. Now all of a sudden he's got a year under his belt. They get four wins. It's a boost from the season before. And he has his quarterback in Sefo Lufau, who you were raving about. More on what he brings to the table during games. You and Yogi Roth were going back and forth. Yogi was talking about some of the mechanics of his delivery and the execution
right
on the field. And you said, you know what? He's a winner. He's got this toughness, this it factor that is something that I would think you can't teach. You either have it or you don't. And Mike McIntyre all of a sudden now has less to do in terms of figuring out his process and figuring out his team, and more, I would think, concentration on what's going to happen on the field.
There is no question. And Lufau is a great start in the right direction, because he does, in my estimation, have it. It was not too big for him, even though he was just a freshman eligibility-wise. But remember this now. He had Paul Richardson. Paul Richardson was an absolute difference maker out there at the wide receiver's position. And even when Paul Richardson wasn't getting the ball, he was attracting so much attention of the defense, it was giving other guys you know, like Nelson Spruce, a chance to get open and find holes in the defense. So it's a big step forward for Lufau, the young quarterback, to be able to have the same kind of impact he had as a freshman. Obviously, much more experience now, much more confidence, but without old Paul Richardson over there, we're going to see if the Buffs have somebody that can garner some measure of attention to keep that offense flowing.
Defensively, though, from this team, how much concern is there that they don't have necessarily all the pieces? They have some bright spots, being a freshman last year, Addison Gillum, who I believe set a Colorado school record for tackles. Do they have enough on that side of the ball to compete and take it to more than four wins?
We won't know until we see it. We had this conversation a year ago. John Embry's last year at the helm of the program, they were far too inexperienced, far too young, far too weak. Just not strong enough to play defense in this conference. Kadeem Carey went through him like, you know, hot knife through butter for over 300 yards and looked like he wasn't even winded doing it. Last year, a little better. You mentioned Addison Gillum, a freshman linebacker, but he was overmatched physically at times. Instinctually, he's there.
Right place,
he knows where to be, but he got run over a bunch of times. So whether or not they're gaining in terms of strength, you know that they're putting all the effort they need to in that regard. Coach McIntyre would allow for nothing less. But whether or not they're ready to step up to the challenges, you mentioned four wins. Remember, two of those were against 1AA teams or FCS opponents. They have to take a quantum leap strength-wise. That, to me, is the number one issue. Not so much talent, strength-wise, to get up to the place where they can compete over a 60-minute game against the quality that exists in the Pac-12.
Seems like when it comes to spring games and getting ready for the season, conditioning is always an issue. I want you to take a listen to Jared Bell, one of the DBs on this Buffaloes team.
It's a lot faster pace this year. You know, coach is really on us. He expects more from us, so he's really hard on us this year around. So we got to compete a lot more. And this spring, we do a lot more competition drills throughout the practice, so it keeps us at our highest level. Oh, it's going to be fun. You know, it's my last spring game, so I expect it to be a doozy.
Harder to do the interview without losing your breath or
they are at altitude. They are at altitude, as you recall, as you and
yes,
I went on that
yes,
run.
Yes.
And by the way, it's healthy and refreshing to hear a young guy say the word doozy.
It has been a while.
That's
a gem.
That doesn't happen
at
that age.
That is a gem.
Yeah.
That is a gem.
I'm thrilled to see that.
We joke about Jared Bell and the conditioning because, look, this is the start. I was just on a conference call with Rich Rodriguez, and we'll talk about Arizona in a second, their spring game this weekend on the Pac-12 networks, Pac-12 Arizona, 1 p.m. Pacific, Saturday. And he had said that last year with some of his guys. He said, we don't practice long, but we practice hard when we're out there. And he said, a lot of times with our guys, we give them popsicles halfway through the practice. And he said, last year, the guys weren't even able to get up to go and get the popsicles because they were so tired. He said this year they're up and they're able to get their popsicles. So we have a little fun with Jared Bell, but these guys are, this is a time for them to get back into shape and to get ready.
Well, it isn't so much shape. It's, I mean, the year is not exactly, you know, sitting over there and waiting for your chance to get back on the field. We find all sorts of ways to torture these youngsters to get them in the tip-top physical shape, whether it be strength and conditioning. But to actually get out there and play football, that's different. And remember this. A year ago, they were introducing all their offense and all their defense.
Yep.
Now they are into it. So now the pace is going faster. And right now, pace might be the number one weapon in college football. So everybody's trying to acclimate themselves to going faster because they see the benefits of it and maybe the pace setter of pace being the Oregon Ducks. Candelati, you got excited about that, didn't you?
I just... Candace Kutz, one of our producers for the Pac-12 Network.
Nobody flaps her wings like Candelati.
You just mentioned something about Colorado and playing at altitude. You've coached in two other teams in the Pac-12 conference with UW and UCLA under your belt. Is there a significant difference at any portion of the season, whether it's the end of the season, the beginning of the season, maybe even the middle, or, you know, a spring game like this where that becomes very apparent that the altitude plays a factor at all for some of your guys?
The altitude's a reality. I have, when you're the home team at Colorado, you just sit and smile at all the different things people try to do to acclimate themselves. The bottom line is you have to be there for a long time to really get that done. So my thought as being the visitor going to Colorado is the less said, the better.
Yeah.
Don't let it become a psychological thing where you're thinking about it. But there's no question that it's an issue, and you just got to plan to play more players.
Did it wear during the game? Basketball season, Tad Boyle, when we were watching, he doesn't play it up, but he makes reference to it being difficult, and there's no doubt that basketball teams that went to Boulder had issues in the second half, and I remember our guys saying, when you first get out there, you don't notice it, and as the game wears on, you can just sort of see guys holding on to their shorts a little bit more than they would in maybe another environment.
I'm not noticing guys holding on to their shorts. Maybe that's something that you do, but I just know that the wind is a factor.
Just, you know, I'm observant. I just got to, you know,
I like that you're paying close attention.
Just paying close attention to stuff like that. I referenced Rich Rodriguez and the fact that Arizona spring game is this weekend on the Pac-12 networks. One of three. Colorado kicks off the coverage at 11 a.m. Pacific time. Then it's Arizona and both Arizona and Stanford at 1 p.m. Pacific on Pac-12 Arizona is where you're going to be able to watch the Wildcats. I want you to hear what Rich Rodriguez had to say about coming into this spring game and what he thinks of his team as a whole.
It's as conscientious a group as I've ever had, so they're eager to learn, and they all, I think, see that it's wide. It's a wide open deal, it truly is, and will be wide open until the fall. My biggest thing is just that if they're all getting better and getting good enough to we can win with, that's a great problem. And I tell you, if somebody, one or two, have really separated themselves, I mean, truly, it's not been that. But it hasn't been from a negative standpoint. It's been like, geez, you guys, we're not playing well. It's been just the opposite. I've seen them all make the same kind of strides.
Okay. Well, if guys are making strides, you tell me, Rick, who does Rich Rodriguez put under center and how does he replace Kadeem Carey?
Well, if I'm an Arizona fan, yep, here's what I'm going to just totally where I'm going to rest my head and not worry so much. He has found a way to win with young quarterbacks, whether it be Pat White at West Virginia, Denard Robinson at Michigan. He comes in and gets Matt Scott to flourish right away in an offense. You just have to know that it's okay that we don't have a guy right now. I'm not buying from a coach's standpoint that you can get everybody the amount of reps and say, hey, everybody's doing great. The offense cannot be that simple, that everybody can go in there and master it quickly. He's going to say that to make sure that people relax and feel good about where it's going, and I have full faith in Rich Rodriguez as a guy that's going to make the choice at the appropriate time, knowing what has to happen following the choice and the amount of time and the reps that youngster is going to need, regardless of who it is, to be ready for game one.
You just said something where you said the team as a whole offensively trying to get ready and the reps and how he's going to play it out. Does what they do, how does that affect – I guess the question is, how does it affect what Rich Rodriguez's offense is? Because you talk about this all the time.
Rich Rodriguez's offense is not going to change.
And that's my point.
No, and with Kadeem Carey gone, it's just going to be a little bit more like by committee, because he's not going to have a guy who's going to carry it 48 times like Kadeem did against Oregon in the great upset in Tucson. He's going to share the reps there. They'll have done a nice job recruiting. Jared Baker, a youngster out of L.A., is going to get some chances. Some of the youngsters are also going to fill into that role. But the quarterback role is the key component to this offense because they now have a slew of great-looking wide receivers. I mean, really good-looking kids. Austin Hill is back, the guy who had 1,300 yards in his season with Matt Scott. If you can get him, let's just say he gets to 1,000 yards. Okay, just comes back to that level. That's a huge – Phillips, their young freshman, Nate Phillips, yeah, was a freshman All-American. He's a bona fide threat. Trey Griffey had two touchdown catches in their bowl game against Boston College. They've got a youngster who transferred from Texas who's really highly thought of, Caleb Jones, another wide receiver. So if they can spread the field and cause people to have to go down and cover them down, the quarterback position, given the zone read nature of their offense, has a chance to really gash some places in the running game. And I think of the Randall kid who comes via, I think he's from Miami, went to LSU. There's a guy who we know can run. We also know the kid who transferred from Texas. I'm blanking on his name. He is a phenomenal Connor Brewer. He's got a chance to spread the ball around. I've seen him throw in camps before he got decided to go to the Longhorn program. So these are guys that can play. Who can do it all is going to be vital for the Rich Rodriguez offense, because if they get that guy, they have places to spread the ball and be you know, a high octane offense.
Are they dangerous in the South?
I think they're very dangerous. Here's the issue if you're at Arizona. First of all, you have to win the South to get to where you want to be, right?
I'm looking at those other teams in the South, and I wonder—
There are four teams that we would consider as viable threats to win the conference, to win the division, okay? You've got UCLA. Yep. You've got Arizona State. Each has won it in the last 2 years. And then you've got USC. Certainly, we always give them high marks because of the talent that's in the program, despite the fact that they lack depth because of the sanctions, this being the last year of those. And then you have Arizona. So those four teams have played each other. So each of them has played six games within that foursome over the last 2 years. Arizona's record in those six games is 1-5. They beat USC at home. That's it. They've gotten swept by Arizona State, and they've been swept by UCLA. And until they can win in those games consistently, and the only way that's going to happen is with a quarterback who knows what he's doing, until they can win those games, then they're in the situation they're currently in, which is they're going to be a pretty good team. They're going to be a team that's dangerous each and every weekend, but it's hard to call them a threat to be a conference champion.
I'm glad you bring up their record against the South opponents, because I can't help but think what happened at the end of the season against Oregon. Now, in football, it's a different vibe than in other sports to this degree. It's such a big day. I mean, you watch college football or the NFL, it's an event. And these games mean, the magnitude of each individual game means so much. We just finished up our college basketball season. You come off of a loss, maybe even two or three in a row, it's not that big of a deal.
College basketball regular season is a one.
It's exactly.
On a scale of 1 to 10 as
compared to football.
Football, which is
no
a
question.
10, right.
So with that in mind, knowing that it wasn't a Pac-12 South opponent, but it was a Pac-12 North opponent, and knowing that it was Oregon and they get a win, how do you use that if you're Rich Rodriguez? Or is it just like, hey, that was last season. It is what it is. We're going to
No. That's a huge, huge ball game. I mean, there's no question about it in terms of what they're
capable. Because that resonates.
They're capable. And it's also a huge ball game for their home crowd, because he can use that to see what happens when you guys come. See what happens when you guys get behind us. We know the Arizona fans are passionate. We see it in basketball. They take over Las Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament.
Unreal.
They take it over. So there's passion in Tucson. Now they need to harness that, and I think Rich Rodriguez can get that done, especially if they get off to a fast start and they get a quarterback that can distribute the ball to all that wealth of talent, both at wide receiver and in the backfield. And if that happens, then they're going to be viable. But they have to win in those three big games that exist in the South Division.
Looking for some clarity for Arizona under center, who's coming out of that backfield. We get step one of that Saturday here on the Pac-12 networks.
I can't wait to watch these guys play. I'm going to be watching very, very carefully.
We're going to be watching both Arizona and Stanford. The two of us are going to be in studio, because Stanford also plays at the same time at 1 p.m. Pacific. So on Pac-12 National, we're going to be shuffling between the two games. So we'll get your
analysis. Because no one shuffles like us.
That is a good point. You were dancing when we started this podcast.
No.
True story. You heard the theme music for the podcast, and you were getting a little rhythm going there.
Air guitar. It was strictly air guitar.
Okay. You can call it whatever you want. Stanford, you know, you're talking about the enthusiasm for the game. Stanford, you and I were at one of their biggest games last season. And let's call a spade here. Sometimes at Stanford, in the Bay Area, college football is not necessarily king. Okay, just that might be the most politically correct way that I can describe it.
They're just studying.
Yet,
they're just watching it on television, because they've got a big important final the next day.
But here's the best part about this: David Shaw and Stanford, whatever this fan support is, and when they are there, it is a great environment. It's back-to-back seasons now, Pac-12 champs, and yet you look at the starters lost. I believe it's 5 on defense. It's 11, 6 total, 6 on offense, 5 on defense, and the names. Because I think a lot of times you look about production, you look at starters who are lost, but it's so hard to look at the numbers and the names. And every time we talked about Stanford last year, I felt it was like one of those guys, especially on defense.
There's no question they've lost a lot of guys who made some huge plays in their success and their run that they've enjoyed the last 4 years. But here's the thing about college football. We know their names because they're on television every week, and because we talk about them all the time. there are youngsters in that program who have watched these guys do what they do, who have joined this program and are just waiting for their turn, and they're going to have their shot. And that's what's beautiful about spring football, because it kind of is like opening your new Christmas present. You open up, oh, look who we have at linebacker. I didn't know about this guy. And that's what we're going to get to do on Saturday. Stanford has a formula. And David Shaw showed that he knows what the formula is. When they lost at Utah last year and struggled to move the ball, they were trying to throw it around, they went right back to the formula. The formula being run downhill and play great defense. Tyler Gaffney's carries per game went up hugely after that ball game, and he made them very happy that was the decision made, because obviously they ended up beating Oregon. I think he had 45 carries in that particular ball game. They were 14 of 21 on third downs. 21 third downs means they're just trying to hang on to the ball. The time of possession was absurd, like 43 minutes to 17. I mean, that's Stanford football, and that's who they're going to be again. And now we just get to find out who are the new names, who are the guys who are going to take over for it. If you're worried about their offensive line, don't be. Because guys like Kyle Murphy, he's been playing tight end the last few years. He couldn't get a spot on the offensive line because of all those guys. Now he actually gets to play where he was recruited to do so.
Yeah.
Josh Garnett, youngster from up in Puyallup, Washington. Here's another guy who played fullback, played tight end. He's going to get to actually play offensive line when he was hugely thought of when coming out of high school. So they have people to step into these deals. What I'm going to be curious to watch, and when I watch Stanford, is their tight end position. You know, is Austin Hooper.
My God, can I just interrupt you for a second? I was on that conference call today.
You're going to, whether I say so or not.
I must have heard Austin Hooper's name, and whatever positive adjective you want to throw out there, you can go to dictionary.com and look up a bunch of positive words. They love this kid.
And I hope he is what they say he is. I really do, for Stanford's sake, because
they need that production.
That's a cornerstone of who they are. They like to get in what they call their elephant personnel. Lots of big bodies in the game. But if there's a Zach Ertz in there or a Kobe Fleener, you know, those guys can go out there and play wideout and make you pay. And they did it time and time again while they were at Stanford. They did not have that piece of the puzzle. Go back to the Rose Bowl on 4th and 1 where they've got to get the drive going, stay alive last year, and they're in their elephant personnel, and there's not a guy on that whole deal with the exception of their fullback Hewitt who has ever caught a pass. And obviously Michigan State was able to tee off and stop them at what they do best, which is run north and south. So this is a growing time for them. Austin Hooper, is it Eric Cotton from Idaho?
I don't think it's – yes, it is Eric Cotton. Yep. Yeah,
those guys have got to turn in to be this guy. If not, they're going to struggle. Now, on the good side for them, they do have some prolific guys coming back at the wide receiver position. Look at a guy like Kevin Hogan, who's entering his third year as a starter. That's going to allow them to – and what Stanford did, going back to Andrew Luck's last year, Stanford felt confident enough in their quarterback and his acumen of understanding defenses to give him 2 and 3 options. And I think that's exactly where we'll find Mr. Hogan this year. Kevin Hogan will have, on certain plays, 2 and 3 choices as to what to do as teams try to gang up, as they always do against Stanford, because you can't let them just bully you with that power coming downhill. As teams try to gang up and get close to the line of scrimmage, Hogan will have the wherewithal to check out and get the ball to guys like Ty Montgomery, Devin Kajust, Michael Rector.
But are you worried? Because a lot of that is pretty.
Chris Owosu's brother is going to be a guy that we look forward to see. Francis Owosu, he's a speedster. They have some guys now that are the chunk player type guys.
But everything that you're describing in terms of the passing game is predicated on them doing what they've been doing. And they had a guy like Tyler Gaffney last year.
You get to pick your poison.
Well, okay, here's the deal, though. Last year, David Shaw kept using the phrase an embarrassment of riches at the running back spot.
Yeah,
and yet it was a clear-cut guy very quickly onto the season. Is there a Gaffney right now on this team?
Has to be. We have to wait and see. I don't know. I know this. We saw Stephen Taylor dominate games because he was able to both protect the quarterback, he was able to run downhill, and he was able to catch balls out of the backfield. Gaffney had the same ability and was able to take that 3 and 4 yard gain and keep going with the pads low, going north and south. The backs that they have right now are smaller. Okay, and we got to wait and see who emerges as the guy that can continue to move the ball, as they say on television, matriculate the ball down the field.
A lot of times watching Tyler Gaffney, the carries as the season went on, they just kept giving him the rock and they kept on piling up. Mentioned at the top of the show, by the way, Stanford, 1 p.m. Pacific, Pac-12 Networks on Saturday, their spring game. Top of the podcast, I'd mentioned new toys and new things that we're going to be doing on the podcast moving forward. Coach, you always have great stories, storyteller. And we thought that every single show.
I got a lot on you.
Stories appropriate for air. You're a storyteller. Those are stories for another time. We thought it would be a great idea for every single podcast for you to share a story, maybe theme related. And because right now this is a time of spring football, we thought we're calling this Gridiron Lullaby. We thought you would tell us a great story from your days.
I should say at this point that I didn't have nothing to do with the name of this portion of our show.
And you, but you did
Gridiron
pick, you did
Lullaby.
Pick the music.
I picked the music because when you hear Lullaby, it's like sleepy time. So wake yourself up, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to talk some ball.
The air guitar is in full effect. I thought this reminded me of Bad to the Bone or a little Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I could listen to that all day long.
I think it's great.
So I'm going to give you a little spring story. All right. This was my last job at UCLA and spring football, my first year there. And I got to tell you, when I got there, I was a little bit, I don't want to say shocked. And I don't want to say disappointed because I love the guys that I had a chance to coach. But the athleticism of the UCLA program that I remembered having been an assistant coach at UCLA years and years before was it wasn't the same. And so I realized we had a job to do here.
Yeah.
Okay. And so but the one thing I was counting on is I had experience at quarterback. I had it was going to be a big fight between two seniors, Pat Conniff, who I thought was an exceptional leader, you know, heart and soul type guy. You loved Pat. Being around Pat made you smile, right? And then Ben Olsen, who was at one time considered the top recruit in the country. He went originally to BYU, went on a LDS mission, came back, transferred to UCLA, had a host of big plays, big left-handed kid. Both guys that looked like they belonged in NFL camps. Those guys were my two seniors, and both were, you know, fighting hard to be the starter. I ended up going and recruiting a third quarterback because having been in this game enough to know if you choose a starter between two seniors, there's a chance one can go. So I needed somebody in the event that somebody decided it was better for them to go and try and play someplace else to have somebody in the stead. And so I recruited a youngster by the name of Kevin Kraft. Those who follow football, Tom Kraft was at San Diego State for a time, heavily revered junior college coach. Anyway, Kevin was in a junior college, decided to come with me. So I had these three quarterbacks going through camp. Practice 14. You get 15 practices, Kendall Adia. That's how many practices you get in spring football. And of these 15 practices, at least I think three of them have to be in just shorts. Okay, you don't get to wear pads on three of them. So the 14th practice I had reserved as a shorts day.
Okay.
Because the 15th was going to be our spring game, and I wanted to go full speed, so I was kind of trying to take a little off of them, make sure they were rested, not sore before the game, because we needed the game. We needed to play, even though it's risky. And I know a lot of coaches, you know, as you watch the spring games on the Pac-12 networks, you're going to notice that they're not all what you're
becoming
your mind,
a company guy. I love
in
it.
In your mind, think of as games. They're kind of organized scrimmages, and sometimes they'll tackle and sometimes they won't. And it's all because they're trying to get guys healthy because there is no waiver wire in college football. So anyway, this Thursday practice was completely shorts. No one can get hurt in shorts, right, Mike? I lose both Pat Cowan, who ends up trying to avoid a little rush to his right. He had a little bit of an unstable knee and for whatever reason took the wrong step at the wrong time, ended up tearing his ACL on a play in the 14th practice wearing shorts. Lost for the season. I feel horrible just talking about the story. The next play, Ben Olsen.
How did you feel about Pat's chances prior to that injury?
Well, because I like both kids, I don't have to tell you.
Okay.
I don't have to tell you who was going to win that competition because I like both kids. Both of them, in my mind, can think they were going
perfect,
to win.
Perfect.
So, but as Pat's moving away from the line of scrimmage, they're dressing him. I'm moving the huddle, and I've got this furrowed brow. You know, how can I? Poor kid. I hope he's okay. I don't know that it's, you know, you have to do an MRI to find out what the damage is. But obviously, it doesn't look good. Ben Olsen's now taking the next snap, and as he goes away, he starts hopping. And it looks, to a guy who used to play quarterback, like he got stepped on. And I always kind of smile when someone gets stepped on because it hurts like a doozy.
Yeah, it is a doozy.
We wanted to see if we'd get doozy in here twice in this show. So it hurts a lot. And so I'm laughing at him. Get back in there. And he's walking it off. So I put Kevin Kraft in there for that play, and then I go Ben back in. So he now steps away. And now he can't walk. He starts to drop back, and he goes down like a house of cards. And he is broken the fifth metatarsal on his foot, your little toe, the bone that goes up into your foot.
That's a doozy.
That's a doozy. And he's lost for the season. So my two seniors, not only did I not even get a chance to name who was going to be the starter and worried of losing one, I lose both on practice 14. So now here comes 15. Kevin Kraft.
Okay.
With the Superman cape on. He's got to be my guy. So now fast forward to the spring game at the Rose Bowl. And Kevin Kraft knew what his job was going to be and so forth. But now he's out at the Rose Bowl and we're under the lights. And I don't know how many people, maybe 10,000, maybe 8,000 people are out there watching the Bruins. It's a fun night. I've got a microphone telling folks what's going on. And I'm in the huddle. The head coach kind of meanders behind so he can keep track and got your coaches on the sideline working sideline administration and so forth. So I'm on there. And Kevin Kraft is out there. And his first time, now he's with the ones. He's the starter, right? He can't open his mouth. He's so nervous. The cotton mouth.
You've heard
the
dry mouth.
The dry mouth, the cotton mouth, when your nerves get going.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looked like he put his face in a box of powdered donuts.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
He could not, his lips could not peel. I'm looking at him going, you got to be able to talk, son. He couldn't speak to me. So I put my arm around him. I go, Kev, it's just practice. Come on, man. You're. This is what you dreamed of. We talked about what would happen when, you know, if something happened, you were ready to go. This is what you want. He's nodding.
Where was he from?
He was at San Diego State, and then when his dad got fired at San Diego State, he ended up going.
High school, though.
He was down in San Diego.
Okay, so he was down there. Big high school? I mean, like, because
no, he
you know what I'm saying? You know where I'm going with this? Just playing in front of people, those nerves.
No, the anxiety of this and not, he could not open his mouth.
God.
This poor guy. And he grew from that. And in game one, the next year, he threw four interceptions in the first half in a game against Tennessee and then came back and was the hero of the game. So he found a way out of it. He didn't give up. But you talk about deer in the headlight look. Oh, my goodness. So that was my first spring at UCLA. I just remember Kevin Kraft finding a way out of it.
Welcome back to the Bruins, coach.
Working out of it, but losing two guys who both had, you know, what it looked like what it took in shorts for not just for the spring game, but for the season. That was a hard one to take.
Once again.
Can we go back to the music?
Let's
she you know, says no.
You have actually
thrown... We need to have that music to leave that story as well from now on, okay?
Especially when it's not the... It's a little sad, too, in a lot of ways.
Well, it's sad that both those guys' football careers came to an end. And it's also sad that we don't have a mechanism when you lose your senior year to get it back.
Get it back.
Yeah.
A lot of times throughout the course of the last 2 years with me, Rick, you have made reference to me being a company man, which is true. I'm a company guy. I'll do a lot of promotion for different shows, plug different things that are going on. Instead, though, I'm going to turn you into the company man. You are now officially the company man because as I look at the calendar here, just a couple days away, actually a week from today, April 15th, there's a new show that's going to be premiering on the Pac-12 networks.
Oh, this is going to be a good show,
my friend. It's called Under Center. It stars an Emmy-nominated analyst, Rick Neuheisel, if you didn't know who I was referring to, and some of the elite talent around the Pac-12. I have an idea of what this show is about. You've already worked with a lot of these guys. This is your show. This is your baby.
Right.
I want you to be the company guy and sell me on the premiere of Under Center.
I asked the brass here at the Pack.
Yeah, let's get it going. Don't ask for this twice, by the way. So give, what's Under Center going to be like?
Under Center is just a look at the quarterback position. We've all watched John Gruden talk to the guys who are getting ready for the NFL draft, and that show always intrigued me. And I said, we need to do that with the kids who are currently playing college football in our great conference. We need to get them on a board where they can show what they know about the game. I would love to go, just like as Coach Gruden does, go over some plays and see what they were thinking. I want to know what's inside their mind, because we watch games and we know they're trying to throw it to guys in the same color jersey, but I want to know what actually they know. And what I think is also fascinating, because the guys who I've been around who have been terrific at this position and understanding what this position entails all have unbelievable memories of almost every play they ever ran. They can go back and in talking to these kids.
Did you notice that they can do that?
They all can do that.
You know
they
what's amazing?
They all have an acute, especially in things where something went wrong, where they wish they could have it back.
I actually have noticed that over the years working with analysts, and you in particular, because there are many times we'll be during our training camp tour, in the car driving, you seem to remember, do the losses sting more than the wins?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I feel like when it's a negative result, you will know down in the finest detail. Not to say you don't know when it's a positive. You told me some great stories when it's a win and and you remember those things. But I'm always fascinated by, I mean, years ago, I mean, we're talking 15, 20 years ago in some cases, different analysts, different coaches, different players have this memory bank of the details, the minute details of what transpired on a particular play.
Especially when you could have done something different and gotten the more favorable response or results. So there's no question. But talking to kids about, you know, what did you do here that you wished you hadn't, that was fascinating to me. And you're going to learn some things about these guys that you had no idea. For instance, did you know Taylor Kelly has a twin brother?
Whoa, I didn't know that. I knew he drove cars.
He has a twin brother.
Identical?
No, but
can he play?
He was a DB. He was a corner.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was always Taylor was the quarterback and he was the receiver and defensive back.
So, all right, give me two things here. One, was there anything that you picked up from me during the course of the last 2 years that you used in the show? Like, for example,
give me a sense of.
Did you use one of those in the show?
I think I did.
Yes!
I think I did. Give me a sense of this. Yeah, no question.
It's a running joke for those who have no idea what the heck I'm talking about. In studio, a lot of times, I will ask a question of a coach or a player, and I'll say, give me a sense of what this is like.
Yeah.
And you picked up on it that I tend to do it.
Give me a sense.
Now, I've promised everyone I will only do it once a show, and as soon as I do it, I turn to you and I go, there it is. So I just wanted to make sure that a give me a sense is going to be incorporated into Under Center.
I think I've mixed a give me a sense in there. So, you know, interviewing somebody is a skill, just like anything else. And I think you're terrific at it, Mike. But this was not so much an interview as it
was. First compliment I ever got from Rick Neuheisel.
A conversation. I didn't want to come off as an interviewer. I wanted to come off as a coach.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I wanted to come off as a coach, having a conversation with a guy who played the same position that I did and wanting to know what he thinks important about it and what he remembers about these different plays. And I also, for the most part, bring out plays where they are doing very neat things and things that differentiate them from the pack, because this is a conference laden with great quarterbacks.
Five quarterbacks you will sit with?
Five. I'm hoping maybe six, but five to start. You know, scheduling is complicated because they've got school and the like. But we haven't come down to my house. We call the dungeon, my little office downstairs where I've got my film set up and walk out on the beach.
The long walk.
Taking Sean Mannion out to the beach. I thought we were going to have to give sunglasses to everybody else on the beach. He was like
a little pasty.
Oh my goodness. Irish and from Corvallis, not a good combination.
How did you? So it's Sean Mannion, I know, is the first episode. That's Wednesday. It looks like. Well, you have here. Is it the 16th or the 15th? I got two different dates here. Anyway, it's premiered.
So we're 1 week from today. So it's the 16th, right?
So it's the 16th. Okay, yeah. So Wednesday, April 16th. It's under center. It's Sean Mannion first. The following week, Taylor Kelly. We saw his story chronicled last year on The Drive. Brett Hundley. That's the – to me, as a fan, I want to see Brett Hundley in the conversation for the Heisman. Brett Hundley, right? A guy that you were able to bring.
I didn't even talk to him about the Heisman.
Really?
No. Because –
well, you know – you have a great relationship with him.
I have a great relationship with him. But I wanted to talk to him about incorporating his legs with his arm and how he saw the two. Were the legs just something that were innate and he just takes off? Or the legs, did he realize what the legs did to his throwing game? And also, you know, having known him and know a little of the backstory because I recruited him, I think it's an interesting story for people to realize, you know, not everybody thought he was a quarterback.
How did you decide which quarterbacks you wanted to speak to?
Well, it was easy in this conference because there are so many, you know, bona fide big timers. And because, and obviously you want to have somebody who's wet behind the ears, who's already played. So it's an exciting thing to be able to get to know these guys a little bit better and to know how much they appreciate what it means, not only to the here and now, but as a legacy of playing this position.
Did you find yourself at the end of your conversations having a different not to say you didn't appreciate these guys from watching them from afar, even getting to know them a little bit during the training camp tour, but this is an extended period of time that you get to sit down with these guys. Is there something, besides just a tidbit, but just an overall sense that you got from these guys and being able to spend time with them?
They all understand how much work it takes. I mean, none of these guys was born on third base, so to speak. They understand how much work it takes to master this position. You know, there was a clip I picked up of Sean Mannion where he had lined up on the wrong side. He had to put him on the other side. And then he had to wait for him to get set and then get the guy in motion. Then he had to lift his leg to tell the guard, I want the ball back. This is all as the 40-second clock's going down. Then he has to hit a third and three pass with 3 minutes left and down by three. You know, it's all going on, and then he has to be at a political science class on the next, you know, and he's got a test on Monday. That's what's going on. People are watching for entertainment, and they want their team to win and so on and so forth. But the amount and the attention to detail that has to go in, and it has to go in so much that it goes from the conscious to the subconscious so that you're not thinking about it. You can do all that. It's like jugglers, right? They can do all that and still carry a conversation because they don't have to think about catching it. They've done it so many times, they know what they're doing.
I just had someone send me something about the, like, picking up new knowledge or a skill set, and like that's the final phase. It's like phase one, trying to learn it, you make a lot of mistakes. Phase two is you work through it and you don't make as many mistakes.
You've read that book, Outliers?
Yeah.
Malcolm Gladwell?
Yeah,
10,000 hours
is
what they say you have to be able to do to get to a place of proficiency to be at the best. Considered among the best. Well, we're talking about the best in college football. It may be too young in their lives to say that 10,000 hours, but it's not far off.
Yeah.
And to donate, and it's not just the skill. It's to understand all that goes into the mental preparation. And if I give you this pattern against that coverage, where am I going? And oh, by the way, you don't have any guarantee that your left tackle is going to make his block. So if that happens, now you have to get off of that guy that you'd planned your whole life to throw to, and I've got to know where I'm going and how to save a play. So it's a complicated deal, and I think it's fun for quarterbacks to talk to quarterbacks, if you will, about it because there's a you understand.
Yeah.
I understand how hard this is.
I'm actually very excited to watch this show. Once again, it premieres next Wednesday, April 16th, 8 p.m. Pacific, Pac-12 Networks. It starts with Sean Mannion, the quarterback of the—
You're going to be unbelievably impressed with how bright he is.
I've talked to him twice. He's actually been on the podcast a couple times now, and he is—
He's taller than you.
Do you remember when you had Travis Wilson stand next to me?
I think
he's
two of you.
Really,
I think two of you
is not Travis. Is not Travis. Two of me is probably a little bit Sean Mannion, but two of me is not Travis Wilson. He is, who by the way had a great practice on Friday.
That's terrific news for the Utah fans because I was worried that he was kind of, hey, we're going to keep him around, see if he can come all the way back. He gets five touchdown passes. That means he's getting a lot of reps.
Yeah.
That kind of reps means that there's news that says Travis Wilson will be ready to go.
11 to 21 passing, five touchdowns.
Keep your fingers crossed.
No turnovers for him. And I think a buck 82 in the air. Not that that means a huge thing.
You know what the problem in spring football is about that?
People look at the numbers and
no, you're also coaching the defense.
You know what? Positive sign, though. They got another offensive coordinator in the fold.
Dave Christensen.
Yeah. Is in the mix. So
I think they have about four offensive coordinators on the staff.
Yeah. Yeah. Dennis Erickson, who was one of their OCs, now with the running backs, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Very interesting. We will talk about Utah once their spring game creeps up on us. Don't forget, three of them this weekend. It's Colorado starting it off at 11 a.m. Pacific, Arizona and Stanford at 1 p.m. Pacific time. You can catch Arizona on Pac-12 Arizona and Stanford on Pac-12 Bay Area. That will wrap up.
Done already?
Yeah, after 63 days. Didn't it go by fast? 63 days without a football podcast.
It was a blur.
It really felt like that in a lot of ways. Always appreciate you downloading us, pac-12.com, as well as iTunes. Candace McKenzie always holding it down for us. But we will see you next Wednesday on another edition of the Pac-12 Network's football podcast.
This is the Pac-12 Network's football podcast.